From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippines, 7,107 islands, Manila, I bid you all a wonderful weekend. It's absolutely spectacular here. The sun is out. We're in a slightly cooler time of the year. Here in the Philippines, we have basically two seasons. One is summer and one is the rainy season, which is still really summer. We're that close to the equator. So that's what you get. Two seasons, summer and the rainy season. If you want to really, what you have in the rainy season basically is you still have hot weather, but you have rain. If you can digest that, it's still hot and humid, but you have rain. So for that, we dub it a season. It's great to be with you all. It's my honor and privilege to be escorting you through the weekend. This is the largest, most popular program of its kind in the entire world called Coast to Coast AM. Great to be here. Aaron is today's webcam shot. Many people asking me to put up a shot of Aaron. So there she is, adjacent to the Christmas tree, and you can just about see her beginning to look like she's going to be a mom. Not quite. It's just beginning. So there you have that. To get to my webcam, just go to coasttocoastam.com. Upper left-hand corner, it'll say Arts Webcam. Click on that, and that's a picture of Aaron. Now, in my life otherwise, all is well. I continue to struggle with this quitting of smoking thing. The people who have said that nicotine is more addictive. I watched a movie the other day with Aaron called The Insider. The Insider was all about the tobacco companies. God, what a good movie that was. What an incredibly good movie that was. Anyway, I'm sure many of you have seen it. And all I can say is, wow. To see those CEOs stand, actually sit, I guess, one at a time, and claim that nicotine and cigarettes are not addictive. What is it they say? Two or three times more addictive than heroin? No joke. So now I'm simply substituting the addiction of nicotine gum for cigarettes. And as I think I mentioned last week, now you will find little deposits of nicotine gum that I felt I had not squeezed every last bit of nicotine out of. And I put them down here and there. And so I guess it's not nearly as messy a habit as smoking, but you will find these little hunks of gum around the house. And then occasionally I'll pick them up and drag what little is left. So I'm substituting one for another, but I guess it's much healthier. Working on it. It's going quite well. It's just that, God, you get sick of chewing gum. You really, really get sick of chewing gum. After a while, it's kind of like, oh, no, not another one. I was never a dedicated gum chewer anyway, so now it's constant chewing. Let us look briefly at the world, and then we'll look at some more interesting news. The West Bank, of course, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called Saturday for elections to end his violent standoff with Hamas. This is going to be a gamble that Palestinians will back him as he seeks to weaken the Islamic militants, avoid civil war, and keep momentum for peace overtures with Israel. Hamas accused Abbas of trying to topple its government, promised to block the elections, urged supporters to take to the streets. This is a real coup, said Foreign Minister Zahar, a Hamas hardliner. He's calling it a coup. Teams of hand-picked expert mountaineers tried Saturday to take advantage of easing weather conditions atop Mount Hood in the search for three missing climbers, but the fickle, still treacherous conditions turn them back. It's been a week now, 50-mile-an-hour winds, helicopters circling the mountain. Nothing yet. It's a long time. Iraq's prime minister reached out to Sunni Arabs at a national reconciliation conference on Saturday, urging Saddam Hussein-era officers to join the new army, and a review of the ban against members of the former dictator's ruling party. But key players on both sides of the Sunni-Shiite divide skipped the meeting, raising serious doubts that the conference will succeed in healing the country's wounds. Federal agents continue to eavesdrop on Americans' electronic communications without warrants a year after the president confirmed the practice. Experts say a new Congress's efforts to limit the program could trigger a constitutional showdown. Maybe there ought to be one over this. High-ranking Democrats set to take control of both chambers are mulling ways to curb the program that Bush secretly authorized a month after September 11. After the attacks, the White House argues the Constitution gives the president wartime powers to eavesdrop that he would not have during times of peace. A pair of spacewalkers manually shaking a stubborn solar array did manage to free some stuck grommet Saturday, but not enough to fold the array up into a box properly. The array was more than half retracted when astronauts Robert Kerbeam and Sunita Williams approached it after completing their main spacewalk tasks. After scores of shakes and then inside remote control commands to please retract, the array folded another several degrees, eventually retracting 65%, but that's where it is now. Well, you know about the storm. Residents of the Pacific Northwest struggled to stay warm Saturday after the worst windstorm in more than a decade knocked out power to more than 1.5 million homes and businesses, killed at least six people. More than 600,000 customers in Washington and Oregon still had no power Saturday. Utilities said some may have to wait until next week for their lights to go back on. The six largest automakers asked a federal judge to toss out a lawsuit by California that accuses them of harming human health and the environment by producing vehicles that contribute to global warming. The American and Japanese auto companies filed a motion Friday in U.S. District Court in Oakland to dismiss the state suit. And an attorney for the carmakers said Saturday the state officials who want to reduce auto emissions. Well, I won't continue from there. In a moment, I've got some news about amateur radio, ham radio. It's a big one. Stay right where you are. By the way, we're going to be going to open lines, so those of you that know the portal numbers and have something you would like to get on the air before we get to our guest, Dr. Bernard Heisch, I believe it is. And boy, this is going to be an interesting interview. He really is a significant scientist. And he has views on, the Big Bang, on God, and so forth, that should be very, very, very interesting from a scientist. It's the end of an era. It really is the end of an era. I would like to commend the Federal Communications Commission on what they have done. In recent days, the Federal Communications Commission has expanded the frequencies, the amount of allotment or space, if you will, that is allowed for voice communication versus code. Morse code. That was done some time ago and is about to go into effect, or just has gone into effect. Now, that was a wise decision that I've been urging for a very long time, because the code bands, to be honest with you, are largely empty, particularly on 75 meters. Now, I guess I'm just talking to hams. I mean, you could listen to the bottom of 75 any given night and hear almost nothing. It was a terrible waste of spectrum. So they did a very wise thing. I know the ARRL is not, that's our organization that represents amateurs to the FCC and does a lot more and is a very good organization, but they've got a lot of old-time hams who are pretty much tied up into the concept of, Morse code, dash, dot, that kind of thing. And so they weren't so happy about it, about that move, and now they have followed it up virtually, I think yesterday. A truly historic move. The Federal Communications Commission has acted to drop entirely the Morse code requirement for all amateur radio class licenses. Now, there are going to be a lot of people very happy about this. I have mixed emotions about it. I would say mixed emotions. I think it is indeed time, and I applaud the Federal Communications Commission for doing it. The rest of the world began dropping the requirement some time ago. And again, some of the old traditionalists at the AARL, that organization that represents us, have lobbied very hard to keep it. But I think it is time finally to do away with the requirement. It stops a lot of people. There are people who are dyslexic who just simply cannot learn the code. To me, it was easy. I did it at 13 years of age, and boy, it just came to me like that, and I spent a year on the air, and my speed went right up through the roof. I can still do about 20 words a minute, and it was like music to me. But I understand there are some dyslexic people who just simply can't do it. Well, guess what, folks? As of about now, no more code. So I greet this with mixed emotions. Definitely, there's some part of me that's a little sad, but honestly, when you think real hard about it, it's time. So those of you who have not been able to get an amateur radio license because you could not pass even 5 words per minute, now that will not stop you. You have only a technical test to take for whatever class of license you would like. And on balance, yes, I'm sad, but I think it was a wise decision. Now, the worrying shrinkage of Arctic sea ice, they're now saying, could accelerate dramatically in coming decades, leaving our planet's most northerly ocean virtually devoid of ice. Devoid of ice in summer. Now they're saying by the year 2040, according to a new study. The paper, which appeared in the U.S. Journal of Geophysical Research Letters on Tuesday, mainly points the finger at greenhouse gas emissions. It warns that if carbon pollution continues to increase at present rates, the Arctic's normal cycle of freezing and thawing faces, their words, catastrophic disruption. A simulation run by scientists at the National Center for Atmospheric Research and Canada's McGill University predicted the area covered by ice in September, before new ice begins to form each year, could shrink from about 5.9 million square miles to 1.9 million square miles within a decade. My God. By 2040, only small amounts of perennial sea ice would remain along the north coasts of Greenland and Canada in the summer. In winter, ice thickness would, get this, be reduced from about 3.5 meters, or about 12 feet, to less than a meter, 3 feet. We have already witnessed major losses in sea ice, but our research is suggesting the decrease over the next few decades could be far more dramatic than anything that's happened so far. Greenhouse gases trap the sun's heat, we all know, gradually forcing the Earth's temperature up. But several peripheral factors could also account for such a rapid meltdown. Here we go. Listen carefully. Open water absorbs more sunlight than ice, accelerating the rate of warming, leading to more ice loss. In other words, more melting, more water, more absorption, more melting. They're really getting alarmed. It's called a positive feedback loop, and it's underway now. The shrinkage of the Arctic ice cap is viewed with alarm by scientists as it appears to perturb important ocean currents elsewhere, noticeably the Gulf Stream, you know, that thing that gives westerly Europe its balmy climate. It also threatens animals like polar bears and seals that depend on the ice, and the Inuits and other native people who hunt these animals and have to travel on thinner ice in the quest. Now, that said, you may not hear a lot more about it. The Bush administration is clamping down on scientists at the U.S. Geological Survey who study everything from caribou mating to global warming, subjecting them to controls on research that might go against official policy. New rules require screening of all facts and interpretations by agency scientists. The rules apply to all scientific papers, to all other public documents, even minor reports on prepared talks, according to documents obtained by the Associated Press top officials at the Interior Department scientific arm, say the rules only standardize what scientists must do to ensure the quality of their work and give a heads up to the agency's public relations staff. Barbara Wainman, the agency's director of communications, said Wednesday, "This is not about stifling or suppressing our science or politicizing our science in any way. I don't have any approval authority. What was designed to do is improve our product flow." Some agency scientists, who until now at least have held free from any political interference, worry that the objectivity of their work now could be compromised. Jim Estes, an internationally recognized marine biologist who works for the geological unit, said, quote, "I feel as though we've got somebody looking over our shoulder every damn thing we do. And to me, that's very scary. It borders on censorship." The explanation was that this was intended to ensure the highest possible quality research, said Estes. A researcher there at the agency for 30 years, but to me it feels more like they're doing this to keep us under their thumbs. It seems as though they're afraid of science. Our findings could be embarrassing to the administration. The new requirements state the USGS's communication office must, quote, be alerted about information products containing high visibility topics or topics of a policy-sensitive nature. Good God. We're talking about scientists here. We're not talking about people writing editorials that the administration might not like. Let me read that again. The new requirements state that the USGS's communications office must be, quoted, alerted about information products containing high visibility topics or topics of a policy-sensitive nature. End quote. Oh, my God. The agency's director, Mark Myers, and its communications office also must be told prior to any submission for publication of findings or data that may be especially newsworthy, have an impact on government policy, or contradict previous public understanding to, oh, my God, to ensure that proper officials are notified and that communication strategies are developed. In other words, if I'm reading this correctly, and I know I am, so that we can figure out how to spin it before we release it. Whatever happened to the no spin zone? Let me read that paragraph again. That just scares the hell out of me. The agency's director, Mark Myers, and its communications office must also be told prior to any submission for publication of findings or data that may be especially newsworthy. I'll try and do this straight. Or have an impact on government policy or contradict previous public understanding to ensure that proper officials are notified and that communication strategies are developed. Oh, my God. So, just a straight read of that paragraph says, look, if something is really important, if you scientists find something really newsworthy, like the South Pole has begun to melt, we want to know about it first so that we can either change it, draw a big black line through it, or figure out how to release it with our spin so it doesn't sound so scary. Or maybe that all the fish in the ocean are going to be gone in 50 years. Now, I wonder, if you give that story to a government official, the basis of the story is all the fish in the ocean are going to be dead in 50 years. His job is to sit down and spin this story so that the public won't get alarmed or that it won't hurt the administration's image. Now, if you had that job, And that was your story. How would you spin that? Maybe like a caller we had last week who said, well, Art, the ocean levels are rising, right? So maybe if all the fish die, the ocean levels from the melting at the North and South Pole won't inundate our coastal city so much because all the fish will be dead and they'll displace. Well, they won't displace more water, and so the ocean levels won't rise as high. Is that how you'd spin that story? Oh, my God. What a world we live in, huh? And I'm on the other side of it at the moment. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Indeed, here I am, keeping an eye on the sun, of course. As you know, the sun is coming up with some giant, dangerous sunspots that caused the astronauts to have to sort of hide out a little bit while some of the radiation passed. I got a number of emails from people in the northern part of the U.S. who were seeing auroras, so the sun really was pounding upon the Earth. And why it's doing it at this part of the sun cycle, nobody knows. Well, not true. There is Ed Dames. I'll be right back. All right, between now and the top of the hour, it's going to be open lines all the way. Dr. Bernard Hush is going to be my guest. Dr. Bernard Hush is an astrophysicist. Now, listen carefully. He's author of over 130 scientific publications. He actually served as scientific editor of the Astrophysical Journal for 10 years, was principal investigator on several NASA research projects. Well, you get the idea, right? You know what he's going to be talking about? A book he's written called The God Theory, Universes, Zero-Point Fields, and What's Behind It All. Coming from a man like that, this should be a particularly intriguing interview, I would think. All right, let us begin. As promised, west of the Rockies, Ken in Hawaii, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. I just wanted to talk about you, talking about your ham radio and shortwave and everything. My grandfather, back in 1960, late 60s, early 70s, got me into listening to ham radio, and then I bought one of those multiband radios, moved up to police scanners and all that, and now I live in Kauai, Hawaii, on the very, very north point, and I tune in on AM radios. And I can go literally click by click and pick up a station from everywhere. I can pick you up on KFI from Los Angeles.
Oh, no kidding.
KOGO from San Diego.
No kidding.
KHVH from Honolulu. KONG from Kauai here. And another station, I can't think of the name, from up in Seattle.
I'll tell you something you might look for. Last week, I just heard, and it's amazing to me because I've always wanted it to be so, but we're carried by the Armed Forces Network. Now, that means that we're on the air in Iraq, Afghanistan, virtually around the world, and on 5.7 something or another megahertz. We're also on shortwave, apparently. So you might look for us on the shortwave bands as well.
5.7. Wait.
Somewhere I should have kept the exact frequency, but I just learned it was true, and I think that's really cool. I was wondering why I kept getting all these emails from Iraq.
Yeah. I can even pick up stations from the Philippines, because, like, you know, over here in Kauai, there's a lot of Filipinos, so I understand. I don't understand it, but I recognize the language. I can pick up stations from the Philippines, Japan, Mexico. It's incredible because, you know, we have such a flat ocean coming out here, and it just bounces out here.
I'll tell you kind of a cute little thing. I'm sure you can. You might look for one. They're on different frequencies here. As you know, in the U.S., our AM stations are separated by 10 kilohertz. Right? Here in the Philippines, we have one AM station on, get this, 666.
Oh, God.
Yeah, now, in a Catholic country, would you think there would be a radio station on 666? No, but there is.
Oh, man. You think that one monster came out that you talked about? I can't remember the name of the monster.
It's the Aswang, sir.
That's it. But, yeah, I've been, I called during the earthquake we had here, and I wanted to talk to you about the radio waves then, too, but it was a little too much going on then, but... Yeah, I just think it's real neat that I can pick you up from all over the place. It's amazing.
Yes, you can. You can get us from virtually anywhere. If you search hard enough, it's absolutely amazing what you can do. Just amazing. All right, my friend, thank you very much for the call.
Okay.
And take care. We're going to go east of the Rockies to John in Illinois. Hi, John.
Hi, Art Bell. It's just a great honor to talk to you. I wanted to talk to you. I've listened to you for 10 years. Got 100 questions, but I'll narrow it down. Have you heard of the Out There TV people? They're from Pahrump, Nevada.
Oh, also, yes, I have. Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, they're great. Kate and Richard Mucci. Everyone should listen to their program. Okay. How about everybody, let's get together for an international moon base, okay? I've been reading science fiction since childhood, and gee whiz, why don't we have a moon base? Why don't we have a complete, space exploration, much more than the military budget? I mean, for
The only answer I'm giving to that, my friend, is because it is expensive. That's right. The only thing keeping us from a base on the moon and then, of course, an eventual transit from there to Mars and onward is money. Money, money, money. Money makes the world go round and apparently prevents us from getting off this world. But if you listen to many knowledgeable scientists, we better figure out a way if we want the human race to continue after we have finally managed to, in one way or another, obliterate ourselves, then we had better figure out how to travel. Over to the wild card line, Tony in Denton, Texas. Hey.
Hello, Art. Well, in response to the previous caller, I think we should try to establish a base on the ocean floor as a first step, but that's just a thought. My second thought is, how's your new cat doing, the adopted cat?
Dolly. Dolly is... every day we have a battle. Every night, Dolly goes out to the Christmas tree, which, by the way, you can see in the picture of Aaron on the website tonight. And we have all these wonderful Christmas balls. There is no way that a five-month-old cat will not take every Christmas ball she can get her little paws on and hide them. Bat them around the house until she's hidden them under every available object. So every day we wake up, and it's a search for where did the Christmas balls go.
Ah, but it's awesome. That's awesome. That's what it's all about, man. So anyhow, a few years ago, post 9/11, I'm a semi-depressed human being just because of the events of the world. Your show provided me an outlet because you had a little a pro and anti-war debate show.
Mm-hmm.
I've never called a talk show. I got through to you that night, and I was an anti-war debater who was very, very concerned about the world war potential, questioned the motives of the war and whatnot. However, I was rather dismissed as kind of a naive, younger naive kind of person. And my true question to you is if you can honestly look at your opinion, and see how it's morphed over the past couple of years
I'd be glad to give you the evolution of my opinion. My opinion originally was that we should not go into Iraq. Very strongly. When it was being debated, when we were working our way up toward the second invasion of Iraq, I was very, very strongly against it. Now, once it happened, once our soldiers were in Iraq, and that includes now, I'm afraid my opinion did morph. I'm not happy we went in. Still not happy we went in. But we're there. Our soldiers, Our citizens, our fellow citizens are there. They're fighting for their lives, for our freedom. And so my opinion is we need to figure out a way to win this damn war and get our butts out of there. That's my opinion. We're there. Let's get the job done. Whatever it takes to get it done, to stabilize that government in some way, yes, we'll end up with bases in Iraq. It's a strategic situation. We all know there are reasons we went over there that were above and beyond weapons of possible mass destruction. Hell, we went there for the oil. Let's admit it. We went there for strategic reasons. We need a base in the Middle East. We need a place to station our troops and our supplies and our planes and so forth and so on. So we'll end up with permanent bases there for as long as there's a strategic reason to be there. And we've got to figure out a way to win. It's not simple. And I won't suggest it's simple, and I won't even suggest that I have that plan to win, because I don't. I don't know how we're going to do it. But I know we can't stand another loss like Vietnam. John in New York on the wild card line, you're on the air.
Hello,
John. Hello, John.
Hello, what?
John is going once.
Oh, can you hear me now?
I hear you now, John.
Okay, I don't know what happened there. I'd like to talk to you quickly about quitting smoking besides that Nicorette gum. Did you ever try vitamin therapy now? Because, like, large quantities, not even herbs, but large quantities of vitamin C, say ecstasy, not absorbic acid, has
right.
a calming effect.
Right. I'm taking that. I'm taking vitamin E. I'm taking large quantities of C. Yeah, I'm doing all that.
But the best thing to take overall is calcium and magnesium. 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day with 800 milligrams of magnesium has a it really relaxes the body unbelievably. So that would be the priority there.
Okay. I'll try the advice. I appreciate the advice, and I'll plow onward. But mostly it's the gum chewing. The gum chewing is good, you know, rather than the patch. The patch is okay, but it doesn't take care of, there's a giant psychological aspect to this, and that's doing something with your mouth. So as tired as I am of chewing gum, it helps from that point of view. And of course, it gives you your shot of nicotine. What I'm concerned about is that when I'm done with this, I'm going to be hooked on chewing the gum. Then what? I guess I chew gum for the rest of my life. Is that it? I guess. Let's go, I don't know, let's go here and say, Mike in Idaho, you're on the air.
Thank you, Art. Everybody's talking about you quitting smoking. Okay, I mean, that's not why I called. Do you like spinach?
I can tolerate spinach. The only vegetable I truly hate, the vegetable from hell, lima beans. Otherwise, I'm okay.
Okay, well, spinach can help you curb the appetite.
Really?
Yeah, it does help. I think.
No, I don't like spinach that much. It's not like I could, you know, every time I want a cigarette, go grab some spinach. That'd be bad.
And that's not why I called.
Okay.
I grew up in north central Idaho, and, you know, there's a lot of wilderness. My family has seen Bigfoot and lots of lights in the sky and so on and so forth. But the reason I called was either you or George did a show on thunderbirds. The large birds that can't be explained.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been George. Anyway, about 3 years ago, my wife and I were in a part of central Idaho where there's a lot of meadows and medium altitude lakes. And I looked out. She was driving. I looked out the side of the vehicle, and I saw these two big birds go over, huge wingspans, you know. And I remarked to her, you know, I mean, you know, they're not ravens, they're not eagles, they're too big. And, you know, and she says, you know, she poo-pooed, you know. So we went to the cabin we were going to, and then we came back and we were driving around, and there was this marsh meadow with about 3 foot tall dry grass. It was in the fall, and we were on a dirt road, and I judged distance by football fields. You know, I played football in high school, so I have a tendency to judge distance.
So how many?
By the length of football fields.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And about a little over a football field away, across this dry meadow, were these two birds standing, and the grass was just at their breasts, their bellies.
Mm-hmm.
They looked like cranes, you know, or herons.
Mm-hmm.
They were a medium brown, long beaks, and they were like eating, you know, insects or frogs or something in the marsh. And they had to have stood at the shoulders at the back at least 6 foot tall.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they were
those huge. Those really are gigantic birds. Now, in the desert, in the Nevada desert, we have some absolutely monstrous birds. I have seen a few unaccountably large birds here, but I can't say that I've seen anything that that would achieve 6 feet in height. I can't imagine what that would be. I did post a picture that I thought was absolutely authentic of an Aswang, which is a terrible creature here, absolutely a terrible, mythological creature, many Americans would say. I don't think you'd hear any Filipino say that. It's said to be half human, half creature, bird-like creature. Are there things still in our world that we don't know about? Probably there are. Are there creatures that may not be fully physically here and may be part of the metaphysical world because they seem to come and go as Bigfoot does, almost disappearing? You know, the tracks go along for a while and then gone. That's also a possibility. Could it be an alternate, some sort of alternate reality or alternate universe that they sort of blink in and out of? Sure, it could be. There are things here that are simply inexplicable. Going west of the Rockies to Joy in Arizona.
Hello, Art.
Howdy. Hi.
I'm delighted to speak with you again. I have an idea for how we can get to peace on this planet.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it takes a little truth and openness, but it's a very doable thing.
I'm listening.
Okay. There are energies on this planet that are given to us from the planet itself, living, breathing plants, and they are teachers of peace. And there is one in particular. It is one of the greatest foods on the planet. It is one of the greatest fuels on the planet. Biomass absorbs carbons before it ever emits any. It is one of the
hemp.
Greatest... What? Yes.
Hemp.
Cannabis. Yes.
I just, you know, a little
yes.
shot out there.
Sure.
I guess, yeah.
But, I mean, it does so very much, and it is also a teacher of peace. Food, fuel, fiber, medicine, and
I know.
Forbidden.
It was the Wall Street Journal that ran an article and said that if the United States allowed the sale of hemp in its various forms,
mm-hmm.
including industrial and clothing and all the rest of
growing.
It,
yes.
there, it would generate immediately a half trillion dollars.
Yes.
A half
right.
trillion dollars. That's
yes.
$500 billion
uh-huh.
in
yes.
revenue.
It would do so very much that is positive. It would create so much more the border issues. A lot of that would be negated because people could be growing things down in Mexico. They would have income down there. Also, honorable income. It is one of the most honorable and magnificent plants for 10,000 years. It has been utilized, and here it has been maybe 70 years or so that it's been lied about and deceived all of us. So, or not all of us, but for some extent. So I think it's time that
I know.
We
I know, I know, I know,
talk about
I know.
I know. We really have.
But remember, there's a war on drugs, which it was such a shame that marijuana got included. The hemp plant got included in the war on drugs. What a mistake. And of course, once a government makes a mistake, it doesn't very easily turn it around. Now, I would make the case that marijuana as smoked is far, far less dangerous than alcohol, far less costly to the economy than alcohol. The reason I think that it was banned, well, because it slows people down. Some might say it makes them lazy. And America, oh, America likes its people active, workaholics. It wants workaholics. And if you're going to just sit down and sort of enjoy the world and look at the flowers and think everything is wonderful and beautiful, you're not working, and that costs the economy money. And that, my friend, is why I think it is not legal. From the Philippines, I'm Art Bell.